Welcome to Food for Thought. This is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau with Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, an online cookbook, lectures and workshops, articles and essays, this podcast, and a cooking DVD I produced a couple years ago now. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, CompassionateCooks.com. I want to send out a huge thank you to Ray Sikora and Jim Corcoran for sponsoring today's podcast. Jim, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Ray is one of the most amazing activists I know. She's been working on behalf of nonviolence for more than 30 years. She co-founded the International Institute for Humane Education, and she speaks all around the country, actually all around the world, really, on behalf of the voiceless and the powerless. She's one of my favorite people in the world, and I just want you to know who she is so you can hear her speak when she comes to your town. You can check out her website, simplyenough.com. It's www.simplyenough.com. She may win the prize for the length someone goes to hear this podcast. Here's an email I received from her when she first discovered vegetarian food for thought. She wrote, "I've been working on compassionate living issues for more than 30 years now. There are times, as you know, when it can get discouraging and challenging. I recently started listening to your podcast show, and it's the very thing I needed to feel supported and encouraged to continue to do the work that I do. I love every show of yours that I've listened to. I have to canoe across the Rio Grande River and then drive to the nearest town to get to the library, which is the only place I can have access to high-speed internet in our area, and it's the only place I can download your shows, and it's so worth it. I love it." I have this great visual of Ray, like, just canoeing against rapids and inclement weather and desperately trying to get to the library before it closes and just making it. I have this really dramatic scenario in my head, and I love it. Even if it's not dramatized, it's pretty awesome. You got to canoe across the Rio Grande, Ray. So thank you so much for your support and for your email and your very kind words. If you'd like to send me an email and tell me the links to which you're willing to go to listen to this podcast, you can do so at podcast@compassionatecooks.com. I just love it. That just cracks me up. If you are willing and able, I highly encourage you to support this podcast. All of the sponsors have been enjoying a recipe that I send them in return for their podcast. They just let me know what kind of recipe they like, and I send it out. And it's one of the perks of becoming a sponsor. The other perk is just knowing you're supporting a very effective medium of communication, particularly about an issue you don't hear about in the major media, especially with any kind of intelligence or honesty. There has been some good coverage. I shouldn't say there's no coverage, but obviously there needs to be more coverage because it's as if this whole issue doesn't exist the way we tiptoe around it. Speaking of media and this issue being in the media, a lot of people write to me and ask me when I'm going to be on the Food Network and have I tried to get on the Food Network. Well, I was on the Food Network once, to tell you the truth, demonstrating a fantastic vegan barbecue. I'll tell you more about that in a little bit. The point is, I have very little hope that the Food Network and other major media outlets are going to let someone come on and talk openly and honestly about the politics of animal products or the politics of food for that matter. But through an open medium such as podcasting, I can speak the truth. And if you value this truth, if you value what you hear, if you value what's left of free speech in this fine country of ours, then you might want to consider sponsoring this podcast. As far as the Food Network goes, it's made up of a number of production companies. They hire production companies to come in and produce one or several shows. And a few years ago, one such production company came to our house and filmed our vegan barbecue. Well, I had 2 days to put together this thing, and 15 of our closest friends came through immediately and just showed up with food in hand so we could film this barbecue. So they came, they filmed it. We were here all day. We actually went to the grocery store, the little grocery that we shop at, and they were here all day filming, and it was fantastic. It was a great crew. And in fact, two of the people from that crew, who've been working with the Food Network for years, volunteered their time the next month to come back up and film our cooking DVD. So the professionalism of the cooking DVD is beyond anything we could have imagined. I mean, I was already planning to make it pretty professional, but because we had people who'd been working on food shows for so long, we were just so blessed to have them come and volunteer their time. So, and I became friends with one of them in particular. So the crew was fantastic. And, you know, you never know what they're going to edit the show. I mean, you don't know how they're going to depict you and how they're going to edit the show. So you kind of keep your fingers crossed and hope you did the best you can. And I know we did. And so when it came time to watch the show, I don't have TV, so we had to have a friend record it and then come over here and watch it with us. So when we finally watched it, it was pretty funny because the producer was like, so do you like the Food Network? Do you like, you know, barbecue with Bobby Flay? And we're like, oh, yeah, you know. Anyway, we did tell her we didn't have TV. So it was, that was the show with barbecue with Bobby Flay. And so we watched the show and they did a beautiful job editing it. They depicted us as normal people, as we are, having a really great time with a lot of our friends and really cool people. And they did a fantastic job. I heard a rumor that the person who actually edited it was vegetarian. So she was probably thrilled editing a vegetarian show. I can't imagine what that's like, having to edit a barbecue show being a vegetarian. Anyway, the problem, because of course there's the catch. The catch is that in this show called Barbecue with Bobby Flay, this is what I learned after having seen our segment, we knew we were going to be one of four segments. And the way they do certain shows is they have these shows called Crazy Cues. So you see where I'm going with this? So in their show, Barbecue with Bobby Flay, they have this kind of sub-show called Crazy Cues. And they have four segments in this show. So our fantastic, well-edited segment was framed, couched in a show called Crazy Cues. So, just to give you an idea of the other barbecue segments, there was a barbecue at a gas station. I don't know. It was gross. It was barbecue at a gas station. We could barely watch any of the other segments because they were all so disgusting. And they were. I mean, they're just huge, huge slabs of sides of animals. I mean, it was just disgusting. In a gas station. The other one was a barbecue with aliens. It was filmed in, was it Roswell, New Mexico, where they believe to have had UFO sightings. So, I don't know, they're dressed up as aliens or something. You know, something, again, weird. Just, it was just bizarre. And then another one with this guy, this poor guy, who was running around the backyard with a solar barbecue. And, you know, hey, I mean, I'm all for solar everything. But it was really weird and it was really gross and it really didn't work because it's got this huge piece of an animal in this thing and he's chasing the sun around. So the sun would barbecue the meat. Anyway, it didn't work. And then you had our show, which was just a bunch of people hanging out in the backyard, having a good time, eating good food. So they did a great job editing it, yes, but they framed it in a show called Crazy Cues. So it's just disappointing because it didn't have to be that way. And the producer was so great. I loved the producer. But, you know, she just could not think outside the box. She said to me at one time, so this is great. I love what you're doing. This is just fantastic. Do you think there's an audience for a vegetarian show, cooking show? I'm just like, just think outside the box for a minute. Of course there's an audience for it, but you don't even have to call it vegetarian. Just call it vegetables rock. I mean, whatever. But they just don't think outside the box very, very easily. Anyway, so that's when I was on the Food Network. And I don't know. Write to the Food Network. Certainly tell them, ask them to have a vegetarian show. Good luck. I've also had people write to me and say to me in the classes, which is really cute, is that I ought to get on Oprah. Oprah would love you. She would just love you. You got to get on Oprah. That's what they say. And it's very sweet. But I'm not going to get on Oprah, and Oprah is not going to talk to me. Maybe she would love me. I don't know. I'm never going to find out. Oprah won't touch vegetarianism. She will not go near it. Not after being sued for food disparagement, after she had on representatives from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and Howard Lyman. You know the story, right? Howard said that the meat industry was allowing people to feed ground-up animals to cattle. And Oprah said something like, But they're vegetarians. You mean they're feeding meat to vegetarian animals? They're making cannibals out of these animals? And so she turned to the representative from the Cattlemen's Beef Association and asked if that were true, and he said it was. And at that moment, she said something like, well, you just stopped me from ever having another hamburger again. And the next day, beef sales plummeted. So, by the way, you may not be aware of the fact that in 13 states, U.S. states, there are laws called food disparagement laws that make it possible for the food industry to sue their critics for libel. The laws vary from state to state, but they typically allow a food manufacturer or processor to sue a person or group who makes disparaging comments about their food products. And that's what happened to Oprah Winfrey and Howard Lyman. The effect of the lawsuit is that Oprah will never speak about this issue again. She just won't. You know, never say never. I have hopes, of course, for everything, but that's where she is right now. On the other hand, it prompted Howard Lyman to write about his experiences on the show and as a former cattle rancher gone vegan, and he's inspired many, many people to rethink their eating habits. So certainly good has come out of all of that. At a conference several years ago, Frances Moore LePay was there talking about her new book, which was essentially a follow-up to her bestseller Diet for a Small Planet, which she wrote in the 1970s. Anyway, she told the story about being ready to go on Oprah's show to promote her new book at the time. And at the last minute, the producer said, okay, great, we're ready to go, it's going to be a great show, but you know you can't talk about vegetarianism at all, right? She couldn't talk about vegetarianism. She was told she couldn't talk about vegetarianism. And a plant-based diet is what LePay had written about in Diet for a Small Planet. She was looking to see what the causes of world hunger were, and she concluded that if the world was eating a plant-based diet, we could do away with world hunger. And as she told it, she was told that she can't talk about it, and she declined to go on the show, which I think is pretty incredible. So I don't think you're going to see me on Oprah anytime soon. And it's maddening because she has so much power. I mean, all she'd have to do is tell the country that she's going vegetarian and millions would follow. Can you imagine? I mean, it would just be incredible. And, you know, despite her larger than life image, she's human also. And though she talks about her dogs like they're her children, I mean, she refers to her dogs as her children, she's just not making the connection about our need to protect all animals. In fact, she's actually promoting bringing great fame and celebrity to Rachel Ray. She's a celebrity chef on the Food Network, and she doesn't exactly cook up vegetarian fare on her Food Network shows. So I'm not surprised by any of this, but I am surprised at the kind of shared public notion that eating meat somehow is neutral and that not eating meat is political. You know, you've heard people say this. I mean, it's essentially what the producer was saying to me. Yeah, I don't know. It's like a little too political. You don't think we could have a vegetarian show? It's a little too political. As if eating meat is not political, as if it's neutral. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, the human consumption of meat has become so ingrained in our collective psyches that anyone who strays outside of the animal consuming status quo is seen as making a political statement, as if eating meat is not a political statement. Of course it is. It's a position. It's a position. It's not neutral. And what gets out to the public about vegetarianism or the consumption of animals is all done through media personalities whose own positions and biases and eating habits inform their decisions, like the way my segment on the Food Network was framed. Here's one. I've contributed several essays, basically audio essays, editorials, to my local NPR radio station, KQED. There's a show called Perspectives in particular, and the producer's a great guy. Well, we've had some playful and respectful words about vegetarianism. He consumes animals. And in fact, he told me he's had 4 angioplasties, but it had nothing to do with his diet. And then he proceeded to tell me about his favorite ribs place and how they had the most divine coconut cream pie. But his 4 angioplasties had nothing to do with his diet. Anyway, whenever I get an essay accepted, and keep your fingers crossed because I'm actually waiting to hear from him about another one that I submitted, it's almost like I'm supposed to be grateful to him for allowing for an animal-friendly voice on the air. And I am grateful because he's the gatekeeper. He gets to decide if animal-friendly pieces get on the air. He's rejected 1 or 2, and his reasoning makes no sense. For one of them in particular, I submitted a piece about the ethical problems with chickens' eggs. during Easter time to encourage people to think more deeply about the use and abuse of hens during a time when people talk about celebrating life and birth and rebirth. And the producer declined because he said something like, people resent having their traditions questioned when they're in the middle of celebrating them. I wrote to him, of course, and I disagreed with him and told him so, but it, you know, he didn't accept it, and he gets to make that decision. So, you know, it's just amazing to me that people can think that, you know, if it were true, if eating a plant-based diet were really the most beneficial diet, we would be hearing more about it. I mean, it's absurd. Every single day, every single moment, whether it's through radio commercials or television commercials or magazine advertisements, billboards, celebrity endorsements, whatever, we're told what to eat. We're told that real men eat beef, that humans are supposed to consume the milk of another animal, that chicken's eggs are nature's perfect food. You absolutely cannot escape this. I mean, I don't have television. I don't commute to work, so I don't see all these billboards. I don't work in an office where people are talking about the latest TV shows, and I know things that I don't want to know about. Like, I don't want to know who won last season's American Idol, but I still find out about it because it's just prevalent all over the place. I know that Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump are having some kind of spat. I don't want to know this, but I know it. I try really hard not to know these things, but they're unavoidable. Unless you live in a hole in the ground, you're just not immune to all of the messages in our society that say you're supposed to eat meat, that say you're supposed to watch American Idol, and that say that you're supposed to eat meat. Did you ever see that movie? It's called On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever with Barbara Streisand and Yves Montand. Okay, like two of you know what I'm talking about, right? So there's a part in the movie where his voice is in her head. She's kind of psychic. And he's singing this song. The song is called Come Back to Me. Anyway, she can't get him out of her head. He's always there when she's trying to sleep, when she wakes up, when she's in the shower, when she walks through the city. Just constantly he's singing the song, Come Back to Me, and singing the song. So that's what it's like. We're just bombarded with these messages. Is eat me, eat animals, eat me, eat, drink my milk. That we finally agree. And this is why, and I'll say it again, that it's so important to have a support system of like-minded people. Because if you don't, you may feel really tempted by those voices that are all around, and you'll succumb. I mean, I think that's very true. I mean, even Barbara Streisand's character succumbed, but that's okay because it was Yves Montand and he rocks. So that's a totally different story. Anyway, you get the point. But seriously, one thing I find really funny is that you hear people say things like, God, this damn vegetarians, damn vegans, you know, it's fine if you want to eat that way, but don't tell me how to eat. Don't tell me how to eat. Don't impose your opinions on me. And yet, people are telling them how to eat all the time. It's not like they're making their own independent decisions. We're totally influenced by the messages from the meat and dairy and egg industries. They're telling us what to eat all the time. But they actually make us think that we're making our own independent food choices. I don't think they're doing that on purpose, but it's brilliant because it's become such a part of the status quo. It's brilliant. They spend billions of dollars to convince people to eat animal flesh and secretions, but people walk around kind of thinking that they came up with the idea themselves. So we all walk around thinking that nobody's telling us what to eat until the damn vegans come along. In 1999, McDonald's spent $627 million in advertising. Burger King spent $403 million. Taco Bell spent $206.5 million. I'm sure these numbers have gone up. In the same year, the National Dairy Council spent $190 million on their celebrity milk mustache ads. And keep in mind that the government's budget for their fruit and vegetable program, their five-a-day program, the budget's $5 million. Compare that with the $627 million in advertising, and you think who's winning out in terms of the messages that are getting to the public. Doesn't even compete, doesn't even begin to compete with the budgets of the animal exploitation industries. And we've been putting money in their pockets for years. I did it for years, and I have some making up to do for that. And that's just advertising. Consider congressional contributions, which invariably affect government food policies. In the 1990s, the meat and poultry industry combined made over $9 million in congressional contributions. The National Restaurant Association made over $3.1 million, and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, $1.4 million. McDonald's Corporation, close to $1.7 million in congressional contributions. And that doesn't even cover the government subsidies that animal exploitation industries receive, particularly the dairy industry, as if cow's milk is some necessary food for humans. Cow's milk is as much of a product as soda is, but it's been surrounded by a halo for so long that people think it's actually sacrilegious to suggest not drinking it. Do you really think the dairy industry cares about you? They care about you as much as the soda industries care about you. They don't care. They care about the bottom line. That's what they care about. They just care about making money off of all of us. If you want to read more about the politics of the food industries and the marketing tactics, particularly those targeting children, I encourage you to check out Michelle Simon's new book. It's called Appetite for Profit. You can go to my website, click on Stock Your Pantry, and you can purchase the book through there. Again, that's my online store, and I get a little commission for it, but it's a great place to look at all of my recommendations for books and for kitchen products, etc. Anyway, her book is not about the meat, dairy, and egg industries per se, but it offers really helpful insight into why the food industries are the ones creating the problems, but despite other public relations attempts, they're not going to be the solution. They're the problem. And also check out Marion Nestle's book, Food Politics, for more on these issues. Now, I don't mean to sound like a cynic, because it's not to say that we shouldn't encourage the Food Network to have a vegetarian show or tell Oprah that she'd really like me and that I should be on the show, or, you know, obviously having a vegetarian segment on her show, or writing letters to the local radio and TV stations asking them or thanking them for airing animal-friendly coverage. I've been trying to get Michael Krasny, he's the host of a popular morning show on KQED Radio, to do a show on animal activists in the San Francisco Bay Area for years. Every time I talk to him, and I've talked to him in person, I've talked to him via email, every time I talk to him, he seems very interested. He tells me that he cares about this issue very much. He asks me to recommend some people for the show. I recommend some people. I recommend myself and some fantastic, well-spoken activists, and nothing ever happens for years. He's the gatekeeper. He continually gives voice to the non-vegetarians, and he's one himself, and he has the power to veto anyone who doesn't reflect his own worldview. In the case that you'd like to remind Michael Krasny, and don't worry if you don't live in the San Francisco Bay Area, he doesn't need to know that. You can just send him an email. His email address is M, as in Michael, Krasny, M. Krasny, M-K-R-A-S, as in Sam, N as in Nancy, Y, at kqed.org. I think you can also just email forum, F-O-R-U-M, as in mom, at kqed.org, and just urge him to do a show on animal advocacy. And you could drop my name while you're at it, because, you know, I'm right here, right across the bay. If you value this information, I can't urge you enough. Please consider supporting this podcast. If every subscriber to this podcast contributed just $30, and you can just do $10 a month, that would be 0.03% of the dairy industry's marketing budget. I mean, it's a start, right? Imagine how much good we can do, how many people we can reach with just 0.03% of the marketing budget of the dairy industry. So please visit CompassionateCooks.com and click on Support Our Podcast, and just let me know what kind of recipe you'd like, and I'll send you one right away. Also, thank you again, Ray and Jim. Check out Ray's organization, Simply Enough, at simplyenough.com. And remember, when you're told to believe something as fact, always ask, who is the source? What are they trying to sell? And what do they have to gain? This is Colleen from Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.